This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. He turned to the Supreme Court within these last days. New York Times reporting, the Supreme Court appeared poised to weaken a key provision of a landmark civil rights law by sharply limiting the ability of lawmakers to use race as a factor in drawing voting right maps, which could lead to widespread redistricting efforts. If, writes the Times, the justices determine that lawmakers cannot consider race when drawing districts, the consequences for the country's political balance could be sweeping. The decision could end the practice endorsed by the court for decades of crafting congressional districts with the purpose of helping minority voters elect the candidate of their choice. Richard, a very good evening to you. I believe this Yes. is called gerrymandering. What is the Voting Rights Act of 1964 that's been challenged, and how is it challenged? Good evening to you.
Well, there are a number of provisions, the dominant one, Section 5 and so forth, all start to say that you are able to keep all of these particular districts under government observation and control to make sure that they don't engage in various forms of racial discrimination that were common in the South. Just to make it a look of more and more neutral, the 65 Act covered other places. I think it was Alaska, but everybody knows what it was after. And the general characteristic was it was thought to be a short-term palliative in order to make sure that the transition took place safely into a situation in which race was not going to be used to exclude blacks from the voting polls. And there's a perfectly legitimate situation. As the civil rights movement takes control, however, the emphasis starts to shift. And no longer is it a short-term transitional provision to make sure that you can control the South while the segregation is still in control of the various government. Every time it gets renewed for longer and longer periods of time. And the intrusion with respect to the kinds of areas that are going to be covered becomes broader and broader. So there was a case called Shelby County decided about 15 years ago, in which the question was whether or not you had to have a pre-clearance review in order to allow people to vote on a water district where racial issues were not involved at all. And it turned out that what the Supreme Court said through Justice Roberts is we're not going to do this. And the rough explanation in a sentence was there's a higher percentage of blacks voting in this state of Alabama than there is of whites. How could you start to imagine that this looks like anything of the situation that we had back in 1964 when racial exclusion was par for the course? Then, in effect, there are two decisions that also have to be put into the mix. First is a case called Shaw v. Reno. And this was another one of these cases where in order to make sure that you had minority-majority districts, that is, districts with blacks in a majority of those districts, so as to put representation, what you did is you drew a district that was like a hydra-headed monster. Part of it ran for 20 miles along Route 85 or whatever the route was. And the whole thing was crazy. And so what happened is these racial gerrymandering districts and start to look like gerrymander, salamander. There was a famous case in 1960 called Tuskegee, Gomelian versus Lightfoot, in which the Supreme Court, through Justice Frankfurt, has said, you can't possibly take the city of Tuskegee and gerrymander its boundaries so as to exclude all the blacks from it. We're putting it back to the old boundary lines, and to hell with you for trying to do this. And that was what segregation was about. Within 20 years, it's all of a sudden, it's completely reversed. And in Shaw v. Reno, Justice O'Connor, I believe it was, she's always the great balancer. And she said, this goes too far as I'm concerned. And so what we knew is that racial gerrymandering was permissible, but we weren't quite sure how permissible it was. Now, the next development is, what about political gerrymandering? Basically, as a rule of thumb, if you keep equal districts in terms of number of voters within that district, and give the local government, whichever party's in control, the ability to reshape the districts, you can, in a state like Illinois, shift, say, 5 out of the 20 seats in the state. And in a place like California, you may be able to do with 49 or 50 states even more by just changing like crazy shapes what it is. So their guys get parked into a state where they have an 80% majority in a given district. Your guys win every district by 53-47. And you can actually do that if you have complete freedom on the shape. In a case called Rucho back in 2019, Chief Justice made what I regard as one of the colossal blunders of this area. He said, we really want to insist on numerical identity, no give there, even to 1%. but we're going to allow you to shape it whatever way you want to, because there are no principles for answering this thing, and it just gets you into a political thicket, was the phrase which Justice Frankfurter, in a case called Colgrove and Bream, used in 1946 to say that the court's not getting involved in redistricting in Illinois. You have to go to Congress to get that stuff done. Congress will never do anything, of course. And so it became a complete impasse. So now they come up again, and you see the arguments, a new court. Basically, racial preferences pretty much everywhere else have gone by the board, including the various admission cases. And so when you get to a Supreme Court, which is now constituted in a way which is more colorblind than the previous one, they're not going to move the redistricting with respect to political motivations, but they're likely to move it with respect to racial motivations.
Yes, I want to use a quote from Justice Kavanaugh on this
point. That's the one to mention.
You said that the 20 years went by and things had reversed. However, this quote talks about time. This is Justice Kavanaugh during the oral arguments. This court's cases in a variety of contexts have said that race-based remedies are permissible for a period of time, sometimes for a long period of time, decades in some cases,
but
that they should not be indefinite and should have an end point. He then went on to ask the NAACP legal defense lawyer, what exactly do you think the end point should be, or how would we know for the intentional use of race to create districts? Does that have an answer, Richard?
No, because what happens is there's a fundamental structural difficulty. Let me just put it in the simplest terms. What happens is everybody kind of thinks that you would like districts to be influenced in the following way. The more black represent individuals you have, the greater their control. Now, what happens is if you have a uniform, homogenous distribution geographically, and blacks are, say, like in Louisiana, 35% of the population or more, they'll lose every district 65-35. What they get is an influence over the dominant party, but they get no seats. The perception on the part of all these minority groups, which I think is correct, is having nobody at the table in Congress means they have much less influence than if it turns out they won two districts by 55% instead of losing all the districts 65-35. So they want that, and they have a kind of a sensible explanation to why it is. The problem is once you start to do that, the structural consequences are disastrous, because now if you have these majority-minority districts, the white districts or the non-black districts are going to become much more conservative. So by the time you get to the Congress, you're going to get the depolarization that you see here. So the great challenge in this area is to figure out what to do to handle the anxiety at the electoral level, and then to figure out how it doesn't mess up things at the congressional level. And nobody's been able to come up with the answer to that question. So at this point, the question is, which of these two things do you care about most? Do you care more about race or about politics? And the Supreme Court is willing to let the political stuff go, but not the racial stuff. My view is they should do neither. My colleague, former colleague now at Harvard, Nick Stephanopoulos, had a very clever idea of how it is that you can use a principled system to make sure that excess votes in given districts are not going to be allowed to prevail by ordering redistricting on that level. My own preference, and I think it's constitutional, the majority does not, is that the way in which you start to do this is to get a machine and draw what we call compact districts. That is, those districts with small allowances for geographical anomalies that essentially tried to have a large area and a small perimeter. And it's characteristic of all the gerrymandered perimeters that they have a constant area and a huge perimeter. And if you could do that by a computer, you get rid of all the politics. Right now, what we do is we say we're going to turn it to an electoral commission of some sort. These are always have an even number. The two sides completely disagree. So then you flip a coin and one side gets the privilege of deciding to wipe out the other side. What has happened in all of these cases is nobody seems to be prepared to compromise on a neutral map. So it goes either one way or another. If you're in Illinois, the abuses are by the Democrats. If you go off to a case like Tennessee, it's going to be the other way around, and Alabama, Louisiana. So it's tit for tat. Texas and California are exactly opposite on this. There is no good way to handle this. And the Supreme Court, by coming in on this issue, if they don't fix up the geographical gerrymandering done on political grounds, it's going to lead to a genuine kind of real catastrophe in terms of the political situation. The Chief Justice says, I don't want the court to get involved in politics. And the moment he says, we're not getting involved in reapportionment, he is involved in politics up to his eyeball. Justice Brennan, who put all of these cases back in Baker v. Carr, he was wrong on the history of the Equal Protection Clause, but that was not what mattered. What he said was redistricting is not politics. Redistricting is trying to get one person, one vote, regardless of the political consequences. He was kind of right on that particular insight. Then you have to have an intelligible principle to do this. And that's where everything started to founder, because within 2 years after we had Baker v. Carr, what we did is we had the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And it turns out you have the courts moving in one direction, the statute moving in another direction. You have a bunch of courts that are very heavily pro-civil rights up to about the last 15 years. And now it's gone the other way. So Shelby County is, I think, the warning case, the canary in the canal, down in the coal mine, whatever, which suggests, I think, very powerfully that they're going to cut back pretty substantially on racial gerrymandering, but do nothing except the political gerrymandering. And that's no better than the current
situation. And will they give a timeline? Does the court do such a thing?
Do you remember the famous affirmative action cases where this Justice Connors said in 2003, we're quite sure this problem will be solved in 20 years, yes. So let's ride it. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, it hasn't been solved, obviously, in 20 years. Anybody who knew what was going on knew that it wasn't.
Well, if they don't provide a timeline, they've not solved anything.
A timeline is essentially perpetual no matter what it says, because the next court can undo this one. What they have to do is to act now if they're going to do anything. They will do something. And my fear is they'll go very hard on the one side, very soft on the other side. And that what's going to happen is it will be a situation which will create only further antagonism. Sooner or later, the Congress has to get involved in this. A good way is to repeal the 1965 Civil Rights Act and to start over again with something which more reflects the temper of the
time. This is the Voting Rights Act, not the Civil Rights
Act. Yeah, the Voting Rights Act. I'm sorry. They have to basically update the whole system, and the court can only do this piecemeal. It's a really comprehensive issue. It has to be done, I think, in a legislative way, but there's no appetite on the part of either party to compromise in the Congress.
Too much work for the Congress, too little time. We need to race to the War Powers Act. Professor Richard Epstein of Civitas Institute teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.